Good morning, everybody. As you said, my name is Kip Balcom, and I want to recognize my co-authors here. I'm part of a multidisciplinary team located at ARS in Auburn, and we do a lot of work related to conservation tillage, cover crops, et cetera, and I'm going to be sharing some of their information as well. I think, you know, it's kind of been touched on with some of the other speakers. You know, why we do some of these things is really pretty universal, I think. We're trying to decrease erosion, et cetera, things like that. But how we do it, it can be quite different. And hopefully, you know, you're going to see some similarities, I think, in this presentation, and maybe some things that are probably pretty different. So I want to set the stage for you here. Obviously, you know, we're dealing with the southeast here. This is a soil order map for made by NRCS. And we're dealing with ultisols. So they're very degraded soils naturally. You know, very low organic matter content, poor soil structures, and they're not very productive soils. They can be if managed properly, but they're not naturally fertile. And there's, you know, there's reasons why we have these soils, why they're in this region. And of course, one thing is we get a lot of rainfall. This is just four different locations at experiment stations located throughout Alabama, and you can see we've got a 63-year summary there. And I apologize, I should have converted these, I forgot. But anyway, we're talking about 54 inches of rain, roughly, during the year. And a little bit more down at the Gulf Coast region. Oh, I forgot about the corner, sorry. A little bit more down here at the Gulf Coast, where we get that Gulf of Mexico effect, so we're up there about 65 inches. So we get a lot of rainfall, but we don't always get it when we want it. And we typically get it at very intense rainfall events that we are not able to utilize as effectively as we would like. So the other thing that we have to deal with is temperature. And this is showing some maximum temperatures at that northernmost location that I mentioned, Belmina. And I compared this to Ames, Iowa, because I could find some data that was coincided with it. And you can see the maximum for each month. And intuitively, we know that the climate is different in Ames, Iowa compared to Belmina, Alabama. But I really wanted to just show this, and particularly like in January, where we have where our lowest minimum temperature is still higher than their maximum temperature on average. So that shows you how, you know, we have a different climate in our area. So therefore, we're going to manage things differently. We may be able to grow cover crops for a longer period of time, et cetera. So we can do a lot of different types of things. And so when you have, you know, a soil that are in a region where we have a lot of high temperatures, high humidity, high rainfall, we don't have a lot of organic matter, and it's certainly not going to stick around what we put out there. So as a result, then we have soils that are very prone to erosion. And I've got two examples here. We've got a cotton field on the left, and that's been harvested. And you can see there's no residue out there. Cotton's a very low residue producing crop. We start getting those rainfall events during the winter, which is typically when we're going to get them. We start seeing some of the erosion. And then also we can see in the corn crop during the summer where we got one of those maybe tropical storms that came in and we got a big rainfall event and we start getting you know, some runoff and erosion that occurred in this particular location as well. So those are some of the main things that we have to combat against. And of course, all of this is made worse when we utilize conventional tillage. It's just going to promote that oxidation of any soil organic matter that you have present. And, you know, just you're not going to be able to build up to a level that's going to be acceptable. And, you know, this is, people kind of showed this in different forms today, but for us, soil carbon is really the basis of our soil health and productivity. If we can improve soil carbon, then we're going to be increasing all these soil physical and chemical properties, and that's going to subsequently enhance productivity, et cetera. Now, for us, when we're trying to increase the soil carbon, you know, we're really only going to be able to do it at the surface. You know, we don't have any, we're not able to increase soil carbon except maybe in the top about 5 centimeters. We don't make a big drastic change down in the soil profile. And by the way, I noticed on some of the slides earlier, like some people were talking about, they started out with 2% organic matter. Some were showing how they went from maybe 4.5 to 5, et cetera. For us, where we have these degraded soils that's been in conventional tillage, we're talking about 0.5%, maybe 0.6%, and at best, under our most intensive management, we may get up to 2.5%. But that makes a huge difference on the productivity of the soil, but it's just what we're having to deal with in our particular region. So obviously, you know, this is kind of an obvious question, but how do we do that? So we utilize conservation tillage and cover crops. And for us, you know, we can't, I don't really want to talk about one without the other. And we prefer to this as a systems approach. These are two separate components, and you get the synergistic effects from both of them. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about each one of them. And one thing, you know, we have to do is manage compaction. We have shallow compaction and deeper compaction. And you can see here, or maybe you can see that's a cotton seedling, and that root has already turned just a little bit near the soil surface. And they call that's the classic J rooting that you see. And obviously when the plant is having to devote energy to getting that root through that hard pan, no matter how big it is or restrictive it is, it's robbing itself of yield potential. So for the shallow compaction, a lot of times the cover crop is adequate enough to take care of that for us for sure, especially on some of our siltier type soils. We do have, in North Alabama, we have some siltier type soils. Research has shown that we can actually no-till into those soils provided we use a cover crop. Now, on the sandier coastal plain soils, this is where we get some of our, more subsurface compaction. Now, obviously, this is an extreme example, but you can see that's a very compacted zone there. If roots are not able to penetrate that, you're going to have shallow rooting, therefore decreased nutrient uptake, water uptake, et cetera, and it's going to negatively impact the plant. So the cover crops, obviously, as we mentioned previously, when the soil is during the winter, they can penetrate these hard compacted zones, but we have not been able to get away from the tillage. And I'll show you what kind of tillage we're talking about. You know, we try to promote the non-inversion tillage. A lot of people refer to this as strip till, but the main thing is we don't want to do any kind of inversion type tillage. We want to try to maintain all the beneficial residue on the soil surface that we have, whether it's from the cover crop or from the previous crop, et cetera. So, you know, for us, it's trying to maximize that below ground disruption underneath the row and then minimize surface soil disturbance. And then we can come back and plant in these narrow strips here. And you know, tillage is effective in terms of, or we're still able to sequester carbon in this scenario because people think about tillage, but I think it's because we're not doing that surface tillage. We're minimizing that. And this is some work that we have done recently. This is published in Soil Science Society, American Journal. It's just showing some rates that we had. And you can see the different depths here. We did go into 15 centimeters, but you can see where the highest numbers are obviously in the top 5 centimeters, and then it drops down a little bit, and then it gets, you know, even less. We're just not able to build up that soil carbon down in the profile. And what would really, in this case, one shortcoming of this table is it would have been nice. We should have had a conventional tillage there so you could see what kind of difference we made. But obviously when we had no tillage in this scenario, you know, we were still able to sequester some carbon. Now, the cover crop, this is really a key aspect, and this is a definition provided by Dr. Harry Schomburg, and I think it's very good. I'll just read it real quick. It's a crop whose main purpose is to benefit soil and or subsequent crop in one or more ways, but is not intended to be harvested for feed or sale. And that right there is what sometimes can be a hindrance for our growers in the Southeast. They, you know, if they're new to this, they'll say, well, I got to put in, I got to buy the seed, I got to take the time to do all this, the management, et cetera, and then I'm not even going to harvest, I can't even get any, what am I going to get out of it? And so that's what I hope to be able to demonstrate to you is how we get the benefits out of it. Because I feel like for us, you know, that expense that you put into that cover crop, that's an investment for the soil health and then subsequent productivity. Now for us, we're talking about a lot of biomass. You can see the gentleman standing in the background, this is cereal rye. And we're trying to grow 6 foot tall or more because we want, as I said, we got a condition where our soils are just continually burning that material up. So we've got to constantly add back to that system. And so we're trying to maximize as much as possible. And, of course, this is no different than any cash crop. You know, you want to make sure you got adequate fertility and pH there for particular cover crops that you're trying to grow. Utilizing quality seed, you know, inoculating if you have to. But this is right here is probably the key thing, and I think other guys have talked about this, touched on it. Plant it as early as you can get it. That's how you get that biomass out there. You let it, you know, you plant it as early as you can, obviously getting a good stand, then you terminate it as late as possible. That way you're extended that growing season for as absolutely as long as possible, to get the most biomass that you can produce. Now, this is kind of, maybe I can go through this pretty quick because it's been touched on why we use them. For us, the biggest thing is probably one of the things is erosion control. You can see this soil here getting blowed around. You can imagine what would happen if we got one of those 2-inch rain events at this particular time. You know, the water's just going to start running across the field and taking soil with it and so forth. One thing, if you had this where you were, had seedlings coming up in this scenario, this is actually cotton seedlings. And if you get that sand blowing around, that's where you get the sand blasting that can actually just clip those plants off and you're not able to, you know, to recoup any of that seed cost that you just put out there. Obviously, soil and water quality improvement because we're trying to increase water infiltration with these types of systems. We're, you know, we're slowing down that water from running off the field. Hopefully, it'll go more into the soil profile. If we don't have water running off the field, we should be minimizing nutrient loss because any soil that's running off with it that's got nutrients absorbed to it, we should be maintaining that in the field. But still, ultimately for us, I mean, that is the name of the game for us in our region. So we got to increase the soil organic carbon. Some other indirect benefits, and I wanted to touch on these. We have a weed science in our group, and maybe you've heard about some of the issues with the resistant pigweed that we have in the southeast. And cover crops have been an integral part of working in and trying to solve the pigweed problem. And it's basically, you know, you can see where you have, you've increased the biomass there. You increase the biomass, you're going to minimize weed biomass production, right? Because it basically keeps that soil covered and the sunlight can't penetrate, and then it reduces the germination. And this is just a grower here in Georgia, actually, and he utilizes this system, and you can see he's rolled it down, and he's got a nice mat that he can plant into. This kind of illustrates the point about planting early. The planting date effect, this right here, planting PD3 was what corresponded to the average first frost for each one of these locations. And then it was 2 weeks ahead of that, and then 2 more weeks ahead of that, and then 2 weeks after, and 2 weeks after. So you can see here, this illustrates the point. The earlier you get it planted, you know, before that first frost, the more biomass you're going to see. And this just happens to be clover biomass in this instance. And it drops off pretty significantly when you get it planted much later in the year. And this shows how that related to pigweed density. They're showing that PD1, PD2, PD3, that was the frost. And then we have winter fallow and conventional tillage. And then we look at see what kind of pigweed densities were subsequently measured. And you can see they came back at planting. And, you know, it doesn't eliminate it, but it certainly gives you a benefit and gives a head start on trying to control those kind of pests, if you will, in the system. Now, this is one that I'm sure is controversial, but if you talk about, you know, we don't have naturally fertile soils. So if we're going to get that growth out of it, if we're sitting here and all the things that I've talked about, erosion control, weed suppression, et cetera, you know, trying to build up soil carbon, you look at the one on the left versus the one on the right, which one do you think we're going to enhance those effects with? So we generally try to fertilize our cover crops, our cereals anyway. And you know, we've tried some different sources and things. One thing, we grow a lot of peanuts in the southeast, and we were trying to take advantage of that because peanuts being a legume, and you can see here where it comes out the back of the combine, you know, you got the windrows there, and you can see it showing up here where they planted this cover crop. So we were trying to document, could we get a nitrogen, what kind of nitrogen response could we get that, et cetera. And we were unsuccessful. I think, you know, that's pretty stemmy residue. It's got a pretty high CDN ratio, so you didn't get a lot of nitrogen benefit from it. And I think this right here was nothing more than just a moisture conservation effect out there for that cover crop. Not to say that peanut residue is not beneficial. If you spread it out there, I mean, it's just going to be another residue for you to help protect the soil surface. We've also looked at poultry litter as an alternative end source, and it's been pretty successful. There's a lot of growers that utilize poultry litter as a nitrogen source to enhance their biomass production. And like I say, this has been a good use of this particular resource that we have a lot of in Alabama. This is just showing how much you need to fertilize, and this is just some work we try to do. We're using, 4,000 pounds, about 4,400 kilograms per hectare. That's what we consider like a minimum amount that we'd like to see. Obviously, more is better, but that's kind of where we want. If we're talking about high residency, that's where we're talking. That's where we're kind of trying to break the point at. And you can see here, you know, about 30 pounds of hen to the acre, or a ton of poultry litter to the acre is what we thought was, you know, adequate to help ensure that we get that biomass. Now, obviously, if you put on more, you're going to see an increase, but then it gets into cost, and you know, from a cost-effective standpoint, we feel like 30 pounds is adequate. This is the other thing, we talk about planting it early and then terminating as late as possible. And this kind of illustrates that. Basically, we got rye and wheat planted. They were all planted on the same day for all these years, from 2004 to 2009. And the only difference here is we terminated these before corn roughly about mid-March, and then we waited and terminated these crops about mid-April. So it's only 1 month difference in the amount of growth, but you can see what a difference it made basically every year for both of these cover crops in terms of the amount of biomass that was produced. So that's why we try to, you know, you want that window to be as long as possible, or at least in our region. This has been talked about, water conservation. You know, like I said, we have some very droughty soils, and the cover crops actually are, you know, they're obviously a benefit to us, but I will, you know, not going to say that they're not some risk involved when you're trying to get these crops planted. And this shows an actively growing cereal rye cover crop, and then one right beside it that's been terminated and rolled down, and just going out there and just kind of taking a soil probe and you sticking it in the ground, and you can see which one, you know, this is from the one that's actively growing, much drier soil, you know, not the best condition, whereas one that's able to maintain that moisture, lower, keeping your evaporative soil losses lower and keeping that soil nice and moist. Now, like I say, you have to, this can be a risk for our dry land growers, obviously. We don't have a lot of irrigation in the state of Alabama. We do have some, but this is a something they have to manage, because you want to maximize the growth, but then you want to, you know, make sure you maximize time that you're going to get another rain event before you have to plant. And it can be done, but, you know, sometimes you have these really dry springs, and that saying goes, if it don't rain, it don't matter. So, you know, the cover crops are not going to be the silver bullet. But they will, once they're terminated, you can see how they turn into your best friends then, and they start conserving moisture, et cetera. Now, as far as timing of the termination, you know, this has been touched on too, and we generally say 2 to 4 weeks. For example, if we're talking about we want to plant on May the 1st, then we're going to try to terminate at a minimum 2 weeks ahead of that time. There's a couple of reasons. One, obviously, is for the moisture conservation. We want to get a rainfall event again to recharge that soil profile back up. There's some allelopathic effects that can be leached out of us, particularly our rye, that we want to kind of let that leach out. So, it, you know, that's a non-selective herbicide for you. It can affect your cash crop as well. And then there's other things as far as just making sure that's cover crop is dry and brittle, because your equipment going through these mats are much, it just operates much better as opposed to it being, you know, green and leathery type. Termination, I'll go through this real quick. I mean, people talk about, we don't recommend this, but there are people out there, they want to talk about trying to incorporate like the old way of green manure crops. Obviously, we don't recommend that for our scenario. The mowing, I don't like the mowing for us, because if we mow it, we're already speeding up the decomposition process, and we don't need any help with that, because we got that down. Mechanical rolling is, you know, this is obviously something that a lot of people have done a lot of work with. We have an engineer in our lab, Ted Kronecki. He's done a lot of work with rollers, and I'll just go through. Growers have made their own rollers. This is one for a six-row planter. You can see he's got a guided system. He's planting. He'll come back and plant into that. When you have enough biomass, you can roll it down with about anything, though. You don't necessarily have to have a specialized roller, and this is something where, you know, this has no crimping bars or anything, but they, you know, they'll roll it down. And typically, in an ag production scenario like this, we're going to be utilizing herbicides also, but we like to roll it down. Now, we've done a lot of work, or our engineers have done a lot of work with different roller designs, and particularly for some of the small vegetable growers and organic growers as well. And these are just some of his designs. He's got them for raised beds, et cetera. And this, I think, is really neat, because he's done this. He's taken all these concepts and put them on these self-propelled tractors for, like, people that are really small growers. So you're taking all these things that, You know, all these principles that we talk about, and you typically think of it from a, you know, a big farm or something like that, and he's still utilizing these types of things on a very small scale. So and he's had a lot of success with that. This is something that a grower actually developed. He put a roller up under the in front of the strip till, and so he does it all in one operation. And then an actual equipment manufacturer picked this up and developed it. Getting back to some of the more agronomic type things, this is an aerial photograph of a field that this was a site that had been in place for about 10 years. It's strips going across the field of different conventional and conservation tillage, and it's in a cotton corn rotation. In this case, the corn's already been corn's already been harvested here, and you can see the conventional tillage strips there. That's what that bare ground is, and this field actually has some topography to it. You know, it's got a plateau area here. We've got an eroded side slope and then a depressional type area, and you can see the difference in yield between those two systems, conventional and conservation, where we're utilizing cover crops. We always see a benefit for the conservation tillage. And the other thing is it reduces the yield variability. You know, that's a big benefit. You know, because you see the range down here across that, and so we have less variability across those conservation tillage plots. Now, this is another, I talked about how it's beneficial from moisture holding capacity or increase in plant available water, and that this is just it. You know, we're absorbing all that rainfall when we get it, keeping the soil cooler, lowering evaporative losses, and we're trying to get greater soil water infiltration. That's going to increase plant available water. And that's been documented through several rainfall simulation studies. This is some stuff that was done out of Georgia by Sullivan. And they had two different soil types. And they had conventional tillage and strip till. And for different periods of time, they've been in place, 6 years versus 15. They did a 2-inch rainfall event they simulated. And then you can see how they had much more water going into the soil profile compared to running off. And then they put some numbers on it. If you estimate evapotranspiration of that water that's going into the soil profile, they'd have about 7 days where they didn't need any kind of irrigation or anything like that. And that's how you get, you know, when people talk about making those investments in the cover crop, that's what you're investing in. That's helping protect against the short-term droughts. Even though we get a lot of rainfall, you know, we're about 2 weeks away from a drought all the time because our soils are so dry or so sandy. And then, of course, when you can do that, you're increasing the efficiency of rain or irrigation events, lowering water requirements for us, and then preserving water resources and lowering production costs. And now I want to touch on this. Some guys talk about this. I mean, when you're talking about these high residue systems and you're talking about 6-foot tall rye, you got to do some specialized things to work in it. Planter attachments is probably one of the most popular. You know, there's all kind of row cleaners out there, but the biggest thing for us is you don't want to move a lot of soil. You just want to move enough to move the residue out of the way to be able to plant into it. You know, you don't want to go out there and do tillage with your row cleaners. And then there's other types of things. You got seed firmers and B-slice inserts to make good trench. Those are things that are available. You don't have to do all those things, but they are out there. That some of them can definitely help growers in our area utilizing these types of things. I'll skip that one. This one is to remind me to say that, you know, there's more than one way to do all this stuff. You got a grower here, he's got his strip till going, he's got twin rows, he's got it all mounted in one operation. He doesn't even use his guidance because he doesn't need it. He's just going through there one time and, you know, he's making it work. But there's all different kind of ways to do this stuff. And I wanted to just share all this with you and tell you kind of how we're doing it here in the Southeast. And, you know, we're still trying to make improvements as well. Just a real quick summarize, you know, obviously you got to plant these covers in a timely fashion, invest in time and management necessary to maximize the production for us. And, 2 to 4 weeks, 3 is a good rule of thumb to reduce any problems. And then you do need to consider some of these equipment things that you can utilize to enhance these soil benefits. So I know it may not be necessarily soil health, but it all works together for us as far as, you know, increasing productivity, et cetera. And I will put a shameless plug up there. We have a lot of information related to cover crops in the Southeast, and I encourage you to go to our website, and we have a newsletter as well if you're interested. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions the first time.
Any questions?
Hey.
This is probably a little off the topic. I just wanted to make a point of thanking you for organizing this symposium and having this all at 2:00.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
Uriah, what is it? When you look at the role of Uriah, I'm trying to figure out the time span and the stroke chronology. Where is it actually heading out for you?
Typically, it's already headed out by the time we roll it down, but the ideal time is usually about the soft dough stage when we try to roll it down.
What time is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. It depends on the crop, but if we're talking about a cotton, it's going to be planted in May, so we're talking about rolling it down in April.
So that's all headed out by then?
Yes.
Soft dough?
Yes. Not all the time, but most of the time.
Yeah, but you mentioned just briefly some of the work that you've done.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we've actually, probably the number one that we've looked at is sun hemp. Maybe you guys are familiar with it. Auburn has actually released a variety called AU Golden that will actually produce seed in our region. That was one of the problems with the sun hemp. You couldn't, it's a good cover crop, but it produces a lot of nitrogen, grows very, very quickly. But the seed was always in short supply, so it was very expensive and really wasn't cost-effective for a lot of growers to use it. So Auburn has released one, and we've been doing a lot of work with it. But basically, it really fits in well for us following corn harvest. So we're going to harvest the corn in August, and you can come in there and plant that cover, and it'll grow for a couple of months, and you can get almost 6 foot, 5 to 6 foot tall biomass with it. Plus, it'll produce, roughly around 100 pounds of nitrogen in that time period, too. So that's where it fits in. That's the best niche for us with that summer cover crop.
You talked about improvement in water infiltration and so forth. What about from a tillage standpoint? Has anybody
If I understand the question, you're talking about, say, comparing cover crop infiltration versus tillage infiltration? Yes. Well, there's no doubt. I mean, if we can do no tillage, that's the better way. But so far we haven't been able to get away from that, except on more of our silty type soils. Now, I don't have any data that says how much infiltration I would get with a cover crop versus with a strip till by itself. But I suspect that it's going to be enhanced where we have both of them together.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I had any preference between rolling down and conventional spraying?
Well, it's a big difference from as far as having the residue hang around for us. We want to roll it down and provide that mulch on the soil surface to get all those benefits in terms of weed suppression, maybe reducing runoff, et cetera, keeping evaporative soil losses down, because if we incorporate it into the soil, all it's going to do is just burn it. It's just going to burn it up that much faster. It's just going to, the microbes will start eating it away, and it'll be gone even faster. So we won't get all those types of benefits.
Any questions for Kip or any of our other speakers? We'll open it up to those also. People getting hungry. Yeah. I'm gonna tell you a little story. I like telling stories. We went from being cotton farmers to soybean farmers in 1975 because we got what you showed with the sands coming up. Mm-hmm. It wiped our cotton crop out. So we took a cutting torch to our breaking plow and became soybean farmers. So it's wind erosion can really change your way of life. And I grew up in those sandstorms, so I know what he's talking about. Well, any other comments or questions? Let's give all of our speakers one more big hand.